Welcome to Golau, where we shed some light on politics, policy and polling in Wales and the world. So thanks very much for joining us today. We have a real treat ahead of us. We have some of the biggest brains in Cardiff University, all in one of the smallest rooms here in the university. Professor Roger Scully.
Hello.
Professor Laura McAllister.
Pronounced.
And Nye Davis, one of the PhD researchers in the Wales Governance Centre.
Hello.
Another day, another poll. Mm-hmm. Professor Scully, I wonder if I could ask you to give us the headlines from the latest poll.
Well, the headlines are that the Labour resurgence we saw in the previous poll, the beginning of last week, has proved not to be a flash in the pan or a fluke result. In fact, Labour up another 2 percentage points in the latest poll to 46%, and now have 11-point lead over the Conservatives. The Conservatives are still running about 8 points ahead of where they were in the last general election. But Labour are doing really well. I mean, if they were to get 46% in the general election, that would be their best result in Wales since 2001, sort of at the high point of New Labour. And what we're seeing is the smaller parties being squeezed. Plaid Cymru are down another point in the latest poll, the Lib Dems are down another point. And if the figures in this poll were to be produced on election day, we'd see the highest vote share combined from the two leading parties at any general election in Wales since 1966. Plaid would have their worst result since 1987 in terms of vote share. And the Liberals, Lib Dems, would have their worst percentage vote share in Wales at a general election ever. Even in the dark days of the 1950s, they've never done as badly as 5% in Wales.
Is this the start of a new trend for return to two-party politics?
Well, things are looking rather that way. I mean, one of the many unexpected features of this general election is that typically in recent elections, recent decades even, the pattern has been for the smaller parties to gain support during the general election. They gain a greater level of coverage, a greater level of media attention in the general election campaign than they are normally able to sustain during regular times. A very typical trend we saw with the Lib Dems up to and including 2010 was them to add support in a general election. What we're seeing in this general election is that even though parties like Plaid and the Lib Dems are being represented in leaders' debates, even though they're getting plenty of visibility in other fora as well, nothing seems to be working for the smaller parties. They just can't seem to get traction at all. And we're seeing a concentration of support, at least in the polls, for the two big parties. And within that, we've seen the very high levels of Conservative support at the beginning of the general election campaign. Those have ebbed. And the Labour Party, against many people's expectations, including, I should say, mine, have come back very strongly. So we're seeing in the Britain-wide polls, the Conservative lead reducing significantly. In the Wales-wide polls, we've gone from a 10-point Conservative lead early in the campaign now to an 11-point Labour lead. This is dramatic stuff.
Laura, this all seems very volatile. We've seen that the polls have swung hugely just in the space of 1 month. And what do you think are the reasons behind this variability at the moment and the current apparent surge in support for Labour?
Well, nothing is simple in an election campaign, but I think it is relatively simple in this one. I think it's about Brexit. And I think one of the reasons for the scenarios that Roger's outlining there, and clearly they are scenarios that are extrapolated out of polls rather than what might happen in 7 days' time, but they are conceivable, of course. I think it's a Brexit election. I think that's a very different election to any election we've faced probably since the 1960s, hence some of the moves around two-partyism. And I think what that means is that the electorate is very focused on one issue alone, Brexit stroke economy, because I think the public conflate the economy with whatever will happen around the exit negotiations from the European Union. And around that, they see a prime ministerial role rather than a role for their local MP or anyone else. And I think that's what's underlying some of the trends that we're talking about here with two-partyism. Also, I think the kind of polarisation of opinion around the two leaders is really significant in terms of shaping some of this. Because, of course, we started with Theresa May enjoying extremely high ratings in terms of popularity and credibility and trust as a leader. And now we've seen a pretty sharp decline, although she's still significantly ahead of Corbyn, is worth saying. I think at UK level, certainly, there's still a sort of 11, 12-point gap in most of the polls. So let's not overplay that. But, you know, we've seen a rise in Corbyn's popularity. I'm not sure the credibility has been boosted that much, although the polls might tell us it has. But I think people can imagine some success for Corbyn now, which they simply couldn't imagine at the very beginning of the campaign.
It was very interesting to hear in the most recent Guardian Politics podcast, Owen Jones was saying that actually he feels that this is a validation of the Labour position on Brexit, in that Labour Party has done the right thing. If they had gone down the Lib Dem route and they had fully opposed Brexit at a party-wide basis, then they wouldn't be able to make the case that they are now, that they're an alternative negotiator in Brexit negotiations. And also allowing the few Labour MPs that rebelled against the whip to vote for Article 50, they can go back to their constituencies now and say, hey, we voted with you on this. So actually, they managed to play both sides well. And would you agree with that? Is this a validation of Labour's position on Brexit?
I think it's a fair analysis, but there's a difference between strategy and tactics. I mean, they're tactics for this election, but of course a wider strategy could say, were Labour not to form the government after June the 8th, then they still, of course, have recourse to a different kind of strategy were negotiations to go badly. And of course, in fairness to the Lib Dems, whilst they approached this election as the only party campaigning for another referendum and really challenging the result in some regards in terms of understanding and perception of what might happen, the Labour Party has gone into it saying we accept the result, we will be looking for the best deal possible for the UK out of the negotiations. But of course, if things were to go horribly wrong, that doesn't rule out completely asking for a referendum some way down the line in 2018-19 on the terms of an exit. And I think that's what, you know, we don't know. But there's no doubt at all that Brexit has framed this election, sometimes a bit more subtly than we expected, you know, around the economic prospects and jobs and immigration. But there's no doubt at all in my mind other issues just haven't really featured. Even interestingly, the NHS. And you'd expect with a Labour boost at this late stage to see some of that coalesce around an interpretation of Labour's connection with the NHS. But I think Brexit has been so dominant that really other issues haven't been able to feature.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of bits of polling data relevant to what Laura's just said there. I think we've been asking in the most recent polls in Wales about, you know, what do you think are the most important issues in the election? And Brexit continues to be in Wales, you know, rated as the most important issue ahead of the traditional leading issues in election, the economy, education and the health service. And I think that does continue to play to the Conservatives' advantage. Even in Wales, they're still rated as the best party to manage the Brexit issue. Another thing Laura was saying about how opinion has become quite strong on the two prime ministerial contenders, I was just looking at the details of this most recent poll, and it's really striking how, you know, Conservatives are still very strongly behind Theresa May. Labour supporters have become increasingly strongly behind Jeremy Corbyn, and hostile to, you know, the antagonistic party leader. Obviously, you'd expect Labour supporters to be more favourable to a Labour leader than to a Conservative, but the extent of that difference is really stark now in the most recent poll. I mean, just, you know, we asked people to evaluate party leaders on a 0 to 10 scale, where 0 means strongly dislike, and fully 53% now of Labour supporters are giving Theresa May a 0 out of 10, and 49% of Conservative supporters are giving Jeremy Corbyn a 0 out of 10. So there's really high levels of hostility to the opposing party leader, as well as now very strong levels of support for their own party leader. You'd expect some of that, but the extent that we're seeing in the polls right now is truly remarkable.
In terms of those party leader ratings, I noticed that in the latest poll results, Jeremy Corbyn has taken quite a considerable bump in terms of his support ratings. They've gone from middle threes to middle fours. That's quite a rise.
Yes, Corbyn has improved. We've seen that in the Britain-wide polls. We've seen that to a somewhat greater extent even in the Welsh polls. And Theresa May's rating has slipped. I mean, the one qualifier I will say about the polls, one thing that makes me a little bit nervous, you know, YouGov are a very good company, but they're the only company polling in Wales regularly. We're seeing in the Britain-wide polls that YouGov, in the last week or two, have been very much to the sort of lower end of the spectrum in terms of the Conservative lead over Labour. Their most recent poll now has put the Tories lead down to 3 percentage points. Some other companies like Comres and ICM are continuing to show significantly greater Conservative leads. Now, of course, it could well be that YouGov are getting it right, in which case, hopefully they, one would expect they'll be getting it right in Wales as well. It's possible, though, that YouGov may be overstating the extent of Labour recovery and Conservative decline across Britain, in which case we might also see that being somewhat overstated in Wales.
I just wanted to come in on the leadership point. It seems to me that once the election started, there seemed to be a general sort of, especially when the poll came out suggesting in Wales a Tory surge, that there might have been this like panic within the Labour Party, and they've sort of closed ranks around Jeremy Corbyn and said, right, we have to get behind him now if we have any chance. I know people who know me will be bored about me talking about an Iron Bevan, but in 1951, he'd resigned from the Labour government and there was an election coming up and lots of splits within the Labour Party, and he argued we needed not a uniform, but a united party. And I think there has been a sense that people are gathering around. They may not be particularly fans of Corbyn himself or his policies, maybe, but I thought the Labour manifesto was quite, there was some concessions to Corbyn's opponents within the Labour Party. So I think there does seem to be a general sort of rallying around Corbyn.
Although I agree partly with what you say, Nye, but what's fascinated me is when the First Minister, who has been front and centre of the Welsh Labour campaign here, has been pressed on Jeremy Corbyn, he's been very, very reticent. I mean, I think some of his language has been, well, he'd make a better prime minister than Theresa May. You know, that's hardly a ringing endorsement of your leader. And he's been very nervous about saying overtly, I'm lending my unequivocal support to Jeremy Corbyn. Now, that's kind of, we almost accept that because we know about the divisions within the UK Labour Party. But that's absolutely peculiar, isn't it, in any election, that the First Minister isn't really prepared to add his, put his back into support for the UK leader.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most interesting sort of structural features of this general election has been how different the Labour campaign has been from last time in terms of the distinctiveness. So 2 years ago, the Shadow Secretary of State represented Labour in the Welsh debates. This time round, it's the First Minister. Last time round, the Welsh Labour manifesto was a lightly Welshed up version of the UK document. This time round, it's a completely separate document. And, traditionally, the received wisdom about elections, I think with a lot of evidence to back it up, is that you want a party to look as united as possible, that united parties win general elections, and it's almost sort of better to be united behind a policy of slaughtering the firstborn than to be publicly divided. This time, it's really interesting the sense in which the Labour Party in Wales has been quite publicly advertising its differences from the UK-wide party, from Jeremy Corbyn, and almost actively, ostentatiously displaying divisions or at least distinctions within the party. That's an unusual strategy, but it does appear, at the moment at least, that is paying dividends.
Yeah, it almost appears that they're two separate united parties at the moment, isn't it? Welsh Labour and the UK Labour Party. You mentioned the Welsh Leaders debate there, and I do wonder if this is a continuation, the latest poll data is a continuation of the general feeling that we've had, that the political mosh pit, as the Blurt podcast recently described the commentariat as, are the only people actually watching and affected by the
Leaders debate. Well, I said that. I think it was probably not well received by the TV production company who was making the Leaders debate. But I've said all along, there are two elections going on here. There's the election that we're all talking about and engaging with and poring over polls about. And then there's the rest of the population out there who's just getting on with their lives. There wasn't a great enthusiasm for this election from the very beginning. And I think that shows in the kind of engagement that people have had with the campaign. I mean, everybody I've spoken to who's outside the inner circles of political anorectum, is that a word? I don't know. Are kind of taking a very casual connection and relationship with the election. I think that might just throw in a few surprises because, the polls can't pick up on the public mood in that way, really. And neither can they pick up, of course, on very distinctive local campaigns. I've said before that actually Plaid, for example, doesn't necessarily need to be high in the national share of the vote to gain one stroke two seats if it's got itself organised in the critical seats. I mean, it helps, of course, if you've got a better, you know, profile nationally. And I think that'll be the interesting dynamics on election night and the following morning will be the extent to which we see some really distinctive dynamics at play in marginals that are three-way like Ynys Môn, or where Plaid is a challenger to Labour, or where the Lib Dems are a challenger to Labour like Cardiff Central.
Yeah, I mean, I would not at all be surprised if on election night and the following morning we see actually some quite contradictory swings. You know, sometimes you get an election, the 1997 Labour landslide, for instance, where there's just this huge tide towards a political party and there's not much you can do to resist it. And even local campaigning doesn't seem to make a great deal of impact on that. Other times, and I think this may well be that sort of year, there isn't some sort of great national mood going in one particular direction. And so local campaigning, particular candidates, the profile of a particular constituency could all make a difference. And we could see some quite contradictory swings. So maybe, you know, ending up with not a huge amount of net change, but within that churn of seats between different parties, so some going from Labour Conservative and some going back the other way. One other point, I mean, Laura was saying just now about, you know, the leaders' debate. Laura and I were both in the spin room for the Welsh leaders' debate on Tuesday night this week. And one of the things I thought was really interesting and telling was being with my fellow political animacs in the spin room about 10 minutes before the debate. I kind of looked around the room, and even there, quite a few people were just chatting amongst themselves. They lost interest in the debate that they were there to analyse and spin. And I commented to the journalist I was sitting next to, it's really telling that even amongst this group of people, frankly, some of them can find more interesting things to do than to watch this debate.
Is there a broader question there about how the media broadly covers general elections, particularly with a view to the devolved UK that we currently live in? I was reading today Stephen Cushion's article in The Conversation about how the UK media is covering devolved elections. We have this peculiar situation where we are seeing a conflation of devolved and non-devolved issues, and there's a whole variety of different things that the UK media is perhaps intentionally and perhaps inadvertently communicating that are incorrect for the different territories within the UK, the four different countries. Is there something wrong with the way that our media is covering general elections?
If you look at Welsh Labour strategy, it's, as Laura said, it's been clear, this distinction between Welsh Labour and British Labour. What I found is when I watch reports and read reports about Welsh Labour strategy, it is clear that Welsh Labour are differentiating themselves because the reporters are saying it is clear Welsh Labour are differentiating themselves. I don't think it's a secret or a sort of subtle tactic that Labour are doing. But I think it comes to a point that's been discussed quite a lot recently about the media in, if we're looking at Wales particularly, the media in Wales, perhaps there isn't a strong media. But I think in this instance, in this election, it seems to me that it's the parties themselves, in particular Labour and Plaid Cymru as well, because of course Plaid Cymru is a Welsh party, so they would discuss Welsh issues. But it seems to me that it's the parties who are sort of muddying the waters a bit and making it unclear.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nye. Although I think the media should have played a more challenging role at times. I think they've allowed the parties to get away with a tactic that is at best sailing close to the wind, and at worst pretty disingenuous, really. Because to put devolved issues so prominently in the pledges of a Welsh Labour manifesto when they're essentially recycling the manifesto from last year's National Assembly elections is disingenuous, because it's basically asking people to vote for something they've already voted for and have actually elected a government on, if you follow that logic through. I think the media have been pretty weak in terms of challenge to party leaders and to candidates on this. And I wonder why that is. I mean, if you try and sort of dissect it, at the end of the day, 85% of the population of the UK is in England. And most of the constituencies are in England for obvious reasons. And when we talk about the election in England, it is clearly going to be framed by issues around health and education and transport and economic development and so on, which of course are devolved. And if you were to try and handle that absolutely correctly. You'd have to have very different concurrent media analysis of the campaigns. And I think we're not there yet in our kind of new multi-level governance system. The media hasn't quite adapted to that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it clearly is very difficult for the media. Because if you were trying to do some sort of differentiated analysis, you also have to take into account the fact that the devolution settlements are different for Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. And the Northern Ireland one may well end up sort of being suspended for some time anyway, so that you were in a different situation again there. And to actually try and convey that in a way which is both accurate and interesting is extremely difficult. And I think it's not surprising that the media falls short at times, but also, as I think both Naya and Laura have been saying, there has been some quite deliberate strategic obfuscation by the parties in this election and to some extent in previous elections as well. But I suppose we see with the Welsh Labour campaign here a sort of a particularly obvious example of playing up the distinctive Welsh Labour brand, but doing so in ways which at times is arguably rather misleading in relation to the devolution settlements. But, elections are difficult things to fight, and they are rarely places for the intellectually fastidious. And this election, in that respect, is certainly no exception.
Now, I just want to say there that, yes, it is quite misleading by Welsh Labour to adopt this strategy, and I think Laura used the word disingenuous. But in a sense, you must ask, can we really blame them for doing this? Because once again, going back to that initial poll, which said that Tories were going to win Wales for the first time since 1922, was it? Welsh Labour would have thought then, right, what can we do to damage limitation here, to hold on to as many seats as possible? So, elections are about winning votes, it's vote maximising. Mm. So Welsh Labour clearly think that stressing the Welsh side of Welsh Labour will hold on to votes. So yes, I think it is misleading, but you can see why Welsh Labour are doing this. And
I have to say, I've never really bought the idea that Labour would lose such a swathe of seats in Wales. Regardless, forget the polls. Just I can't get my head around that notion because of a few factors, really. The kind of cultural reach of Labour in key areas in South Wales and North East Wales, and the fact that they have a very efficient machine, not everywhere, but they have a history of getting their vote out because they know where it is. And when you're talking about the seats in North East Wales, the kind of five, the cluster of five, four there in Ennismore, and then you look at the cluster in South Wales, those are seats that Labour's held for 30, 40, 50 years, and they know where their vote is. So in a sense, this is a turnout election as well, isn't it? Because turnout will be absolutely critical. I'm going slightly off track here, but if the turnout is low, then that we imagine that will benefit the Conservatives because older voters are more likely to vote, and we know older voters are favouring the Conservatives at the moment and so on, despite the social care and dementia tax fiasco. And if it's lower, then it might well benefit Labour. But even then, we're nervous, aren't we, I think, because younger people are predominantly supporting Labour, and we know that they claim they're going to vote but don't always make the trek to the polling station. So I think as well as a Brexit election, it's a turnout election. But going back to my point about why I don't think Labour was ever going to lose as many seats, now that might come back and haunt me on June the 9th, is also because they are damn good defenders of what they've got. They know how to fight a campaign. They know how to move people around to make sure they're doing the, hard work on the doorstep and so on. And ultimately, I think that they were reluctant Conservative voters, people who were voting for Theresa May rather than for the Conservatives. And I think the decline in May's popularity has allowed some of those softer Tory voters to be persuaded to come back to Labour.
It does appear that the sort of presidentialisation of this election, with Theresa May at the forefront of the Conservative campaign, does seem to have actually worked against the Conservatives in the last couple of weeks, particularly some of the media performances, despite not participating in the debates. Theresa May has really not come across particularly convincingly in the opportunities that she has done on the leaders' questions.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the election, it seemed very obvious for the Conservatives to focus on Brexit and focus on leadership, because those seem to be two huge advantages for them. I think Brexit is still an advantage for them. Leadership has become less so. Theresa May has not, frankly, had a particularly good election campaign. She's been, I think, rather diminished by the campaign rather than sort of promoted in status. She's had a difficult time. She's been shown to be not particularly good in responding to difficult interviews. And I think, you can understand, for instance, why she wasn't, at the start of the campaign, willing to take part in the leaders' debates, because if you're 20, 30 points ahead in the polls, why take risks? Why put yourself in any situation where you might drop a clanger or something difficult might happen? But actually, I think her absence from the leaders' debate last night just looked awful.
It compounded a narrative almost. That she's trying to avoid scrutiny.
Yeah, Corbyn was there, did okay. Some of the other party leaders did quite well. And Theresa May, it was just giving a free hit to opponents, that, as Tim Farron put it, she couldn't be bothered to be there. So I think, leadership is looking like much less of an advantage to the Conservatives than it was. You can understand why they focused on it, but if focus on leadership only makes sense if your leader continues to be popular, and she's certainly taken quite a few hits.
And I agree. And what has surprised me is the lack of flexibility in the strategy of the Conservatives in this election, because, using a football analogy, as we're right in the middle of Champions League, a manager's job is to read the game and adjust tactics while the game is going on, and put on substitutions, alter the formation and so on. And the Conservatives haven't done that. And that surprises me, because it was pretty obvious, the tactics were right to kick off the campaign. We've got a popular leader, well ahead in the polls. Don't expose her, as Roger said, to risks and everything else. But once that started to change, I think there should have been a quick move by strategists to say, let's brief her in a different way. Let's get her to be a bit more engaging with an audience. Let's get her to mix with ordinary people a bit more, as Corbyn was doing. And they're making some concessions to that now, but it's kind of too little too late, in my opinion.
I don't want to dwell on it too much, but there have been a number of substitutions on the Conservative benches at the moment. I think we ran out of substitutes during the Welsh leaders' debate, didn't we? Is there anything to say about the Conservatives in the Welsh context, that they neither had the Secretary of State nor the leader of the Welsh Conservative group in the Assembly fronting up their debate? Or is that just a case of miscommunication?
Well, I think it could be a bit of both. Miscommunication seems to have played a part. But if you look at Welsh Conservative social media sites, you'd be hard-pressed to find Andrew Artie Davis's photo there. It's very much Theresa May has been the focus, which I found quite strange what you were just talking about, that this election was Theresa May versus Corbyn, yet Theresa May doesn't turn up for a debate, which is what she's billed as her election, in a way. And I think there has been an attempt to get her out to members of the public, but it hasn't come across very well, I don't think. Was it the Plymouth Herald interview where she's been asked questions? She started every answer with "I'm very clear," and didn't answer the question. Yes. And I think there has been some sort of shift in strategy slightly, but I still think It hasn't worked very well.
I mean, if I was Andrew Artie Davis, I'd be very, very nervous about what lies ahead. I think it's been a pretty dreadful campaign by the Welsh Conservatives in terms of just basic handling of a good position that they found themselves in. And to be fair, the good position they found themselves in at the start of this campaign wasn't down to them. It was down to the UK party. But then they seem to have conspired to do as much wrong to undermine that as they possibly can. A holiday in the middle of an election campaign. We haven't had time to have a holiday, and we're just, commentators. So it seems odd to me that that can be penciled in. And secondly, just the kind of divide that's apparent between the UK party and the Welsh party, not helped, of course, by the Mark Reckless saga, which will come back at some point, of course. It seems to me pretty shambolic, pretty awful all round.
Is there a Welsh Conservative party? anymore. I mean, one of the things that's come out of this is that this was always going to be an election campaign run by the Conservative parties in London with Theresa May front and centre. The relative devolution of the Conservative Party into Wales has always been a little bit skin deep in some regards. And is there such a thing as a Welsh Conservative apparatus?
There is to some degree. But I think you could understand why at the beginning of the campaign the Conservatives in Wales would have wanted to focus on the UK-wide picture, because it appeared that Theresa May had a huge advantage in terms of popularity ahead of Jeremy Corbyn. They wanted to focus on Brexit as the key issue. You want to focus on the Britain-wide political space and the leadership there. But I think this election has shown up again that there are problems within the Welsh Conservative Party. Andrew Arty Davies has never gone over particularly well with the public. And there is still something of an issue there in terms of, as there has been in the Welsh Labour Party, but seems to be now being resolved, about who basically is the leader of the party in Wales. Mm. In the case of Labour, that seems to be very much resolved now in the favour of Calvin Jones. And there's been, partly for reasons of electoral necessity, but even some of the more Devo-sceptic Welsh Labour MPs are kind of lining up and accepting this sort of Welsh narrative and Carwin being front and centre of the campaign. The Conservatives, it's still much less clear.
It certainly pales in comparison with the situation in Scotland, where Ruth Davidson has shown what a successful personality and a quality performer can do to really enhance the level of a party within a devolved territory. And now the Conservatives look on course to be the second most successful party in Scotland.
Well, although actually even in Scotland we're seeing them slipping a bit and Labour making some sort of comeback. I mean, I think we see both with Labour in Wales and the Conservatives in Scotland how electoral desperation can sometimes actually be quite useful, at least in terms of concentrating minds. Welsh Labour apparently, or possibly staring disaster in the face of this general election, have been very willing to focus and unite behind the figure of Calvin Jones. Similarly, the Conservatives, doing dreadfully in Scotland for years, came across sort of somebody in Ruth Davidson who appeared to have some ability to connect with the public, and they very much united behind her and made her front and centre of their Scottish Parliament election campaign last year with some success. When parties are desperate, they can do all sorts of things, and sometimes a few of those actually work.
I think it's about identity as well, though, isn't it? I mean, if you look back to when the Welsh Conservatives were led by Nick Bourne, made a very conscious effort to Welshify the party and to make it look and sound and feel Welsh and distinctive to the UK party. The current leadership really hasn't gone down that path. I think there are some in the group that would have preferred, the Conservative group in the Assembly, that would have preferred that strategy, but it hasn't happened. And so I think in many respects, this is the inevitable outcome, really. I think leadership is important, but I think for the Conservatives in this election, even if we'd had a really charismatic, strong, well-received leader in Wales, I don't think he or she would have had a very prominent platform. Because if you think about it, Ruth Davidson had a pretty significant platform at the beginning, much less so now in terms of British profile towards the latter end of the campaign.
Just on the subject of leadership, as we mentioned before, Jeremy Corbyn's popularity has surged recently. Calvin Jones' popularity continues to do very well, and that seems to have a really solid grounding. But the recent surge in support for Jeremy Corbyn's popularity, particularly with younger voters, somebody mentioned whether this is a rerun for a sort of Miliphandom-type campaign, in that this is a fleeting and perhaps not necessarily robust and deep level of support. Is this just a trend?
Yeah, well, I've been saying, there's a few of my friends who are Labour supporters who are saying, we're closing in. And I just keep saying, I remember Miliphandom. And there were the rise in support for Ed Miliband just before the last election. And to me, it feels a bit like that. Sometimes there can be an echo chamber on social media. So, if you're a Corbyn supporter, you're probably going to follow other Corbyn supporters. And it feels a bit like that at the moment. Whether it will be the case, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know if you agree, Nye, but I think it's a sense of deepening his popularity in areas where he was already popular. Mm-hmm. So, if you look at metropolitan areas, London, Liverpool, Manchester and so on, maybe Cardiff, I don't know. and he's deepened his kind of appeal there. But then if you go to the valleys, or even seats like Bridgend and so on, where I've spent a lot of time, and you talk to people about Corbyn, there isn't any greater level of goodwill towards him. Maybe a bit more acceptance that he possibly is doing a better job than they thought he would in this campaign. But there isn't any great goodwill. And the danger, isn't it, is that you get sucked into this belief that you're doing better than you are simply because the loudest voices in certain geographical areas are shouting loudest for you.
Yeah. Although there may also be a little bit of expectations were so low for Corbyn in the campaign. He almost sort of only had to sort of walk on to the stage in the debate and not soil himself or something, and he was exceeding some people's expectations. And he's actually performed in most contexts reasonably capably in this campaign. I think after a couple of years of much of the conservative press, sporting press and so on, portraying him as a complete idiot and traitorous to the country and whatever. He's actually, for instance, in the debate last night, sounded most of the time quite reasonable and sensible. And I think, when expectations have been set so low and someone actually partly contradicts them, then that can elicit a more positive response. And I still suspect that when it comes down to a choice of prime minister between Corbyn and May, that is still playing to the Conservatives' advantage. But the fact that Corbyn has performed reasonably well most of the time in the election, while Theresa May has had a difficult time, has made that much less of an advantage to the Conservatives than it looked like 4 weeks ago.
I know this sounds a bit like sort of amateur psychoanalysis, but I think there's a big difference in personalities between Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, in that Theresa May has doubts about herself, like we all do, and is prepared to kind of exhibit those. And that can trip you up as a politician. Jeremy Corbyn, I don't think, has any doubts at all about himself and his project, and anything anyone says to him won't knock him off track. And that's a strength in an election campaign, because you just keep going. You're like a kind of tank pushing through the desert, really, and knocking everything out of the way. Theresa May's a very different animal, and you can see she's had a blow to her self-confidence at key junctures during this campaign, and that's starting to show in how she responds.
Yeah, I think Jeremy Corbyn is very stubborn. Is something, when he's asked about whether he'll stay on as leader if there's a disastrous result, he said, yes, if the members want me, I'll stay on. And he seems quite unfazed by things like the Paxman interview. He seemed, he's been shouted down, but that didn't, he's very stubborn in his personality.
Yeah, we've got to remember this is someone who sort of kept going through 32 years as an utterly marginalised, often frankly quite despised, backbench MP, and who kept going and kept to the same belief systems. I mean, they're clearly very deep-rooted, and there's somewhere some clearly, as Laura says, very deep-rooted sense of belief in what it is that he argues for. And I think, to some extent, maybe that has come through.
OK, well, thank you very much, Professor Roger Scully, Professor Norman McAllister, and Thinking Wales is Nye Davis. I am going to risk the wrath of Professor Scully by asking for a prediction about this upcoming major contest. Who are we backing for the Champions League final?
Real Madrid.
My heart says Real Madrid because of Bale, but I think Juventus will be victorious.
I'm not that knowledgeable on football, so I'm going to say Madrid just because of Gareth Bale.
And for the other game, the other big game tonight, let's not forget that one. Yeah,
Lyon. This is obviously the one that I was
Lyon
talking about.
Lyon versus Paris Saint-Germain. I think Lyon will win. I think they're just that bit too strong for Paris Saint-Germain.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Deal.
Thanks for listening to Goli, a Cardiff University podcast. Subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from to have the next episode download automatically.